This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, February 25th, 2014. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, listening to Maxine Cumin. Maxine Cumin was 88 years old when she died earlier this month. She left a lot behind, about 17 books of poetry, fiction, and memoirs. In 1973, she won a Pulitzer Prize for poetry, and in the early 1980s was poetry consultant for the Library of Congress, which is what they call poet laureate nowadays. In 2007 in New York City, the Poetry Foundation recorded her reading some of her poems, and we're going to listen to two of them here. I'm joined by Philip Schultz, who is also a Pulitzer Prize winner. His latest book is The Wherewithal, a novel in verse. Now, Philip, you met Maxine Cumin a few times, and you exchanged a lot of emails with her over the years. Can you tell us a little bit about her, what she was like as a person?
Well, she was, you know, unforgettable. I mean, there was something very vivid about her. I met her once at a reading in New Hampshire, and she invited me up to her farm the next day. And it was remarkable the way she came to life, showing us around and wanted every inch of, I think, 200 acres to be seen and witnessed and enjoyed.
So she was a Jewish girl from Philadelphia who ended many years later on a farm in New Hampshire.
Yes. And, you know, her father had a pawn shop and he was very successful. So she grew up with some privilege and advantages. The Jewishness, of course, played quite a role in her life. Her being a woman and a Jew was in a minority in both the academic and worlds of poetry, and she and her great friend Anne Sextons were terrific, wonderful, heroic pioneers, and this was an uphill climb.
Now, you mentioned Anne Sextons. She was a very, very close friend with Anne Sexton, and she's often associated with Anne Sexton and Robert Lowell and confessionalism, but she's not really a confessional poet in the way that they are, is she?
No, not at all. You know, she was grounded in her past. It's a different tradition. It's a different path. And I think she married young and very happily. And I think her outlook on life, at least emotionally and the way she was centered, was very different. So I don't think there was the same need to confide. And we look at Plath and Sexton and Lowell, and there was great pain and a great hole in the center of their lives in many ways, in which they used poetry to fill and to try to assuage and inspire. And poetry, I think, served a different purpose for her. In many ways, poetry was a form of celebration and expression of the things she loved, which is very different from the impulse, the gesture of confessionalism, which was the sharing of pain often.
Now, I asked you to choose two of her poems that we have recorded to listen to, and one of them you chose is called How It Is, and she told us,
"I wrote it shortly after the suicide of my closest friend, Anne Sexton." And that was in October of 1974.
Here's Maxine Cumin reading How It Is.
"Shall I say how it is in your clothes? A month after your death, I wear your blue jacket. The dog at the center of my life recognizes you've come to visit. He's ecstatic. In the left pocket, a hole. In the right, a parking ticket delivered up last August on Bay State Road. In my heart, a scatter like milkweed, a flinging from the pods of the soul. My skin presses your old outline. It is hot and dry inside. I think of the last day of your life, old friend, how I would unwind it, paste it together in a different collage, back from the death car idling in the garage, back up the stairs, your praying hands unlaced, reassembling the bits of bread and tuna fish into a ceremony of sandwich, running the home movie backward to a space we could be easy in, a kitchen place with vodka and ice, our words like living meat. Dear friend, you have excited crowds with your example. They swell like wine bags straining at your seams. I will be years gathering up our words, fishing out letters, snapshots, stains, leaning my ribs against this durable cloth to put on the dumb blue blazer of your death.
That was Maxine Kuman reading How It Is. Now, Philip, that last line is really interesting to me. It's very striking. To put on the dumb blue blazer of your death. Dumb in the sense of this blazer is mute, but it's also an edge of anger in that
anger.
Word dumb, don't you think?
Well, of all the metaphors that she could have picked to express the kind of grief she was suffering, this is like the perfect one. I mean, first of all, we wear grief. I mean, we're enclosed in it, whether we're bound by it, whether we like it or not. And it's such an intimate act to put on this blue blazer.
Mm.
Yes, I think anger is probably great rage. When you're asked to suffer a great loss, you turn to poetry as a way of trying to regain your balance, your bearings. Our words like living meat is so striking.
It's yeah. To me, it's... Yeah, they're sitting around drinking vodka. This is apparently what they used to do.
With vodka and ice, our words like living meat.
That's biblical. That's the word became flesh, right? That's exactly...
Well, yes, and even the way the poem begins.
Shall I say how it is in your clothes?
I mean, it's... so biblical. It's so, isn't it interesting how in times of great need and stress, the Bible and its language is there to console us, and I think that's what she's doing. But living meat is just so, I'm sure that surprised her.
It's weird, too. Living meat is a weird thing. Meat is, we usually think of as dead, you know. We hope it's dead when we're eating it. But living meat, it suggests something vital and still wriggling on the plate, as it were.
And living for her. She, in writing the poem, she wants to keep Anne close to her.
Yeah.
And the intimacy of the jacket is she couldn't have done it. And also in that first stanza.
In the left pocket, a hole.
A hole in her heart.
In the right, a parking ticket delivered up last August on Bay State Road.
Well, you know, a parking ticket, a penalty, something that you have to pay in the future, something you have to remember to do, like remember to remember her.
In my heart, a scatter like milkweed, a flinging from the pods of the soul.
Scattered like milkweed, one of Maxine's, Max, to her friends, favorite images, is a flinging from the pods of the soul. That is such a cry of the heart.
Yeah.
My skin presses your old outline. It is hot and dry inside.
That's what grief feels like. How could she have said it better?
Let's turn to the second poem that you chose. This one is called Nurture. And here's how she sets it up.
It refers to a 19th century account of a supposed wild child, when in truth, historically, there never has been a true wild child discovered.
Okay, here's Maxine Kuman reading Nurture.
From a documentary on marsupials, I learned that a pillowcase makes a fine substitute pouch for an orphaned kangaroo. I am drawn to such dramas of animal rescue. They are warm in the throat. I suffer, the critic proclaims, from an overabundance of maternal genes. Bring me your fallen fledgling, your bummer lamb. Lead the abused, the starvelings, into my barn. Advise the hunted deer to leap into my corn. And had there been a wild child, filthy, fierce as a ferret, he is called in one 19th century account, a wild child to love, it is safe to assume, given my fireside inked with paw prints, there would have been room. Think of the language we two, same and not same, might have constructed from sign, scratch, grimace, grunt, vowel, laughter our first noun, and our long verb, howl.
Oh, boy. There it ends with that howl.
Yeah.
Her heart goes out to these beings. I think also when you have a friend who's ill, who's as wounded as Anne Sexton was, that there's always some impulse to save, to care, to nurture.
So Anne Sexton, in your reading, is kind of the wild child here.
The bummer lamb.
Bring me your fallen fledgling, your bummer lamb.
A bummer lamb is one that is rejected by the mother, that the mother doesn't have enough milk. you know, I prefer the Bummer Lamb because I think that's closer to her, but she wants also the wildness.
And had there been a wild child, filthy, fierce as a ferret, he is called in one 19th century account, a wild child to love, it is safe to assume, given my fireside inked with paw prints, there would have been room.
You know, there's one very personal note, or strikes me as kind of personal note, that I wanted to ask you about.
I suffer, the critic proclaims, from an overabundance of maternal genes.
It makes you wonder, was there a real critic criticizing Maxine Kuhnman?
Well, I think whether someone said that, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did, I think more to the point of the genius of the poem is the fact that she has an inner censor who probably thinks, oh my God, here I go again. Here I am, I'm Noah, I'm a female Noah, and I'm taking on all the rejected bummer lambs of the world onto my ark. Thank God she overcame that inner critic and felt the truth of her strong feelings.
Lead the abused, the starvelings, into my barn.
The starvelings. Oh, my God. Isn't that starvelings?
Yeah,
isn't
the
that
starvelings.
Something the abused?
Mm-hmm.
Who, wasn't this the Anne Sextons of the world, the poets of the world, abused starvelings? She wants to rescue humanity.
Mm. At the end of the poem, she's making kind of an argument for a primitive poetry in some ways, that she's imagining this imaginary wild child and working on a language.
Think of the language we two, same and not same, might have constructed from sign, scratch, grimace, grunt, vowel, laughter our first noun, and our long verb, howl.
Incredible.
And laughter being a noun, you would think to laugh would be the verb, but
isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And our first, it's our, like, what comes first is laughter. Again, if you see this as about her friendship with Anne Sexton or with herself, because Anne Sexton would represent a wild child in herself.
Hmm.
You think of the language we two share, the same and not same, the language of poetry, from sign, scratch, grimace, grunt, vowel, basic, primitive sounds that might be heightened and elevated to poetry.
Mm.
Laughter is the beginning. I'm sure she and Anne shared a great deal of laughter. Knowing Max, you can't be around her for 10 minutes without laughing. I mean, it's great humor.
Mm.
And our long verb, howl. I mean, howl is a long verb. The birth howl, the death howl.
Okay, thank you so much, Philip.
Thank you.
Philip Schultz is the author of The Wherewithal, a novel in verse that just came out from Norton. There's a print interview with Philip Schultz up on our website about his poetry, along with some of his poems and many poems by Maxine Kuhnman as well. Let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.